The grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to The Great Cricketer on the Diamantina Podcast Network. Well, there comes a time in a podcast's life where you go from world-class to elite. Some have described this episode of The Great Cricketer as a seminal moment in internet broadcasting history since Mark Maron sat down with President Obama in a garage in California. Where else, chaps, can you find in the same podcast one of the greatest leaders, nay, icons of not only this sport but of this country? And then the current Australian captain of this, our national game. Of course, it seems the most obvious place and fitting place as well for a podcast that relentlessly speaks of salads, chops, chess pipes and rigs to be hosting Steve Waugh and Tim Payne on the show. But of course, before we do that and we change the internet forever, there's so much to get into beforehand. I will remind everyone that we are available for MC gigs. How to get in contact with us. How to get in contact with us, slide into the DMs and social media. You know how the internet works. My name is Ian Higgins, and I am joined in the same studio by Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. Boys, welcome.
Thanks.
Thanks, you guys.
Yeah, thanks, you guys. Well, we heard your call, listeners out there, after the omni-shambles that was the Dizzy interview last week, and we apologise for Jason Gillespie as well. Hello to all the listeners. It is a seminal, seminal podcast, and it's great to be eyeballing you both, Dave, and Higgos. So I look at you deeply into both of your wonderful... I can't say what colour your eyes are, because I'm colourblind. But,
know your batting average, don't know your eye colour.
I particularly enjoyed at Kembla Coxie's take on the Dizzy interview. That's all right. Just an hour of podcasting with some satirical stuff, a bit of stuff on grade cricket, Jason Gillespie, Adam Collins, who's a rights holder, and your questions. But his feedback on the show was, love you guys, but that sound quality last pod was fucking village. with the laughing emoji, so a bit of passive.
With the tears flying out of the
emoji. Dizzy Gillespie interview was the audio equivalent of keeping in short sleeves and a floppy hat.
Yeah. We are fucking sorry. Like, we're so humiliated
and
cuckolded, and we're apologetic, but also back the fuck off, because this is free premium content with two of the greatest cricketers coming right at you for free, not behind a paywall. This is not cricket behind a paywall. This is free.
Not yet. It's not
yet.
So many things to discuss. Let's roll straight onto it. This is being recorded on a Friday. It's going to come out on a Monday. I don't know why I'm saying that, because it's going to come out when you get it. But James Sutherland's tenure with Cricket Australia finishes today on Friday. 17 years with Cricket Australia. How's he done?
Oh, yeah. Polarizing question, isn't it? I don't know. He was good enough to come on our show, but it's not a case of, he was nice to me, so I don't see the problem. But I did like when he confirmed on our show that, yes, the BCCI does champion. I thought that was one of his highlights. But
I didn't mention that at the AGM.
We will talk about that, won't we? There's been a lot of commercial success with James Sutherland. I think everybody would say that, although, I don't know. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because 17 years is a long time, so just longevity itself just shows a real survival instinct. But similarly, like, so much stuff can happen in 17 years. You know, they've won a whole bunch of stuff, lost a whole bunch of stuff. I don't really know. And I'm just going to say, I'm not really sure how much I care. You know, there's a lot of armchair navel-gazing stuff around what happens in administrations, and you know, at the risk of sounding like a real lowy, can we just get into the cricket?
We can get into the cricket, but you know, it is worth reflecting because it is quite a tenure. I actually caught the AGM on Friday. I live streamed it.
Just caught it.
It's tenure. Tenure.
Is it tenure? It's tenure. Yeah. We're in Australia.
Right. People are yelling into their stereos at the moment. Yeah,
it's like
same
word. Data and data.
Yeah. Okay.
I think data is the most Australian word you can say. It's like barely even a noise. Data.
Mm. But did you guys did you guys watch the AGM? Because I was live streaming it on Facebook. Just in a private tab while at work. I just wanted to see. And as you just mentioned, Pez, I mean, Cricket Australia is experiencing exponential growth in all facets of the game. You know, they showed some PowerPoint slides, revenue projections and charts, just bar charts indicating endless growth across all revenue streams. Participation has never been better. The women in sport, in cricket, oh, it's just all so good.
Money.
Didn't mention anything else. You know, it didn't mention what the punters are worried about, which is sandpaper gate. I guess it was an AGM, and they're just worried about those metrics. But still, come on, give us something.
It's funny, isn't it? Like, if Australia had six good batsmen, Sutherland's 17-year tenure would be good.
Yeah.
That's just where we're at.
70 years is a long time, though, because I was thinking about, you know, I was thinking about how long 17 years is. So what I did was I subtracted 17 from the current year, and that actually equals 2001. What happened in 2001? Well, Laxman and Dravid are still batting, I'm pretty sure, for that 360-odd run partnership that they put on the Eden Gardens. Captain that day was Steve Waugh. We've got him on the show later.
Oh, that's why you're the host. I'm worried. And I'm just the bloke sitting
still.
Getting
a bit slick.
Someone say something about champs.
Yeah.
He was sort of in charge. Well, he was sort of head of Cricket Australia in the years where we were just dominant, where Steve Waugh was winning tosses for fun. Those games where we won 15 in a row. I think we did that twice. But then we went sort of like the lean years as well, like sort of Ponting's the back end of the Ponting years into the early Clark years. But at the same time, he's also been in charge when we've won 3 World Cups. But that to me just says that we're really good at one day cricket. We being the three of us.
I think it's one of those things about leadership where they say that you should leave it in a better place than you found it.
Sure.
And
how do you do that? I think that's a good point. I mean, how do you balance being a successful corporation with winning games of cricket? It's a really difficult position that he found himself in, and he certainly brought in the dollars. But as you say, he hasn't really left the game in the best spot. Cricket Australia, to me, it's kind of like a divorced billionaire.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's kind of sad. The career's booming.
I was going to say.
Property in the Hamptons, you know, the bank balance has never been better, but just, you know, relationships all over the shop. Kids hate them. It's kind of that situation. It's a bit sad. It's a bit sad.
A divorced billionaire.
Cricket Australia. Think about it.
Well, yeah, Cricket Australia's a divorced billionaire, and we also got rolled for 89 by Pakistan. What's the analogy there? I'm not really sure, but I was just trying to move the show along. Australia, it just seemed to have at the moment to have this ability to just break records or just equal new lows. So 89 that we got rolled for by Pakistan was the third lowest score in T20 history. Now, that's a short history, to be fair, so I'm sure, you know, the depths will get deeper before long. But what's going on with the batting?
Yeah.
There's so many records. It's like, you know, October was the hottest month. Like, it's going back in history. Like, but it feels like it's happening every month. There's a new low or a new high.
Yes.
I can't keep track. Is it climate change or is it just our cricket team's shit?
What is going on with the batting? Like, what is wrong with Australian batting? There's something kind of out of line, like, in our whole ecosystem when Australia isn't producing young men who grow up in backyards who, you know, who just want to score runs
autistically
for fun.
Who are hungry, the pursuit of runs.
Yeah, hungrily devour runs and do won't live otherwise. We don't seem to have any of them. And now we've got this Shield shootout going on. We've got this. It's the same thing every year now. We just get to the start of the Shield season.
Yes.
We need about 3 or 4 different spots filled in our batting order. And every new name sounds amazing. And it makes me realise that, like, as Australians, we just love new things. Like, I'm already on the Pekowski bandwagon now.
Yep.
You know,
we're friend of the show.
Yeah, it's right. Lloyd Pope took 7 for overnight. We've got a great spinner. He's the third greatest wicket taker in Australian history. But Pope should be in now because he looks really good and he's got a great wrongin. We just want new things.
I'm not sure this is uniquely Australian, though. I'm thinking of the NBA, for instance. Now, like, LeBron James has been the best player in the NBA since he came into the league, right?
Yep.
He's won, I think, one MVP the last few years. Curry, Harden, Westbrook, they share it around because you want the new thing. Yep. Whereas any time you watch a basketball game, LeBron James is the best player on any court at any given time. He is the most valuable player to each given team. However, he doesn't win the MVP every year.
No rings. Only got one ring. Or two rings, sorry.
I think he's got 3 or 4.
Yeah, couple rings.
Shit. But yeah, so I think inherently humanity wants the new thing. It's like The Simpsons. I'm someone else because we just want someone else.
Exactly.
Not the name that's been tarred.
It's attention span syndrome, isn't it? It's millennial mind cycles. It's what it is.
Because I was thinking about the Australian batting in Pakistan, and like you see 89, you think, fucking hell, like who's batting for Australia? The batting's actually quite good. Like it's Finch and Short opening the batting, Maxwell, Lynn, McDermott and Carey. Like it's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Hang on, McDermott?
Yeah, Craig McDermott.
Craig
McDermott. Cool.
He bats now.
But to be fair, Pakistan are the number one T20i.
I can't keep track of who's the number one of whatever format there is and how many formats I can't keep track of. I'm just really bad at keeping track.
One of the big takeaways before that game started was the trophy. I don't know if you guys saw this. Is it the worst trophy you've ever seen? Can someone I presume everyone's seen the trophy. Can someone describe it for me?
It was sponsored by a biscuit company, was it not? Mm-hmm. And then so they emblazoned or kind of engoldened. Is that even a word? How do you?
It is now.
Yeah.
So they must have tipped a lot of money into it to have say over the design of the trophy.
Yeah.
Because who's the manufacturer of the trophy? Do they not like consult from from branding perspective how this is going to reflect on their name, or let's just get a fucking biscuit up board?
Well, you could just imagine like some sort of David Brent type character going, "Well, what's our company? It's like biscuits. Yeah. Okay, it's a biscuit.
All right, put it in their faces.
Just put gold around
just
it.
Fucking get it in their faces. What's sex next? Sells."
Because I was thinking about some of the most iconic trophies in world sport, chaps, and I'm thinking like the Wimbledon Trophy, FIFA World Cup, the Claret Jug British Open, Stanley Cup. This is just huge piece of alphadom. There's the green jacket, the yellow jersey, and like all of these are marketed as part of the sport in some capacity. Like the mystique of the yellow jersey and the green jacket and all that kind of stuff. And like, what could be more appropriate than like just the most forgettable series against Pakistan and the UAE and Australia? Just whack a Scotch finger on top of it.
Exactly. Well, T20's not steeped in history. I mean, they have cheerleaders and R&B playing at all times during a match. So it's hard to, there's not going to be a Masters green jacket ceremony in the clubhouse after a game. It's just a fucking biscuit on a piece of wood.
Okay, something that's happening at the moment is the culture review. I say at the moment, it's been happening for years. Something that we instigated and we should have been consulted. There's two of them. There's two of them. The Longstaff and the McCosker review. Sam Perry, the culture review. What are we expecting when these come out on Monday, the same day that this podcast comes out, so we're not going to be in the loop?
I don't think we're expecting very much because while it kind of has the pretense of being independent, there's been a lot of suggestions out there from people far more kind of esteemed than us that the people that were commissioned to do it are quite close to Cricket Australia. So we are kind of expecting that it might be a little bit vanilla or beige in its recommendations. That said, it will come out at the same time as obviously Kevin Roberts starts as the new CEO, and it is apparently Pat Howard is going to walk away from his job or not renew his contract in 2019.
Right, okay.
It hasn't been confirmed whether he was pushed or he's jumped or he just decided
I've had enough. I've done enough and I'm retiring right
now.
Now's
the time to leave.
Yeah, I've averaged 8.6 for 7 consecutive years, but now's the time.
It all feels a little bit managed to me, though. We have to see what comes out of it. It was interesting to note ahead of the AGM, the state associations were expecting to be able to read the culture review so that they could actually discuss it, but they were given it kind of 10 minutes before it started. So it all feels, it feels like Cricket Australia is kind of protecting something, but like, doesn't culture as a word just immediately trigger cynicism among grade cricketers or park cricketers or amateur cricketers?
Yes.
Because it's one of the first things that you hear at the start of a pre-season.
Yeah.
Or you have a new coach coming in or some sort of new official with a vague title saying, we're going to define our culture. We have to improve the culture. And invariably, it never happens. The culture
sometimes
never
improves.
Sometimes
it's like a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, I'm thinking, butcher's paper and some kind of poorly designed brainstorming session.
Yeah.
And the only people who take part are like slightly intellectual third graders.
The only way you change culture is if you just change every single person who's within that organization framework or whatever it is. You know, like you can't just like walk in and say, okay, we're going to act and behave differently now.
But we're also going to vote everyone in on the board again on long terms, and we'll release the review a few days
That's
after.
Right. And we're going to have different rules for players who are good around training and different rules for those who are bad.
As you know, Mahatma Gandhi's an idol of mine, and also appropriate given that India are coming out here in a short amount of time.
Tattoo says that.
And I quote, "No culture can live if it attempts to be exclusive." So I was thinking, why don't we incorporate more New Zealandness, in our own culture? Because we like stealing things from New Zealand. Pavlova, Russell Crowe, if he's made a good movie. Otherwise,
Crowded
House, same thing. Lord.
Do we steal Lord?
Just did.
Yeah, Lord. Right. Lady Hawk going further back.
Oh, that's not bad. Yeah, good reference. I mean, sure, New Zealand are single-handedly killing rugby union in this country by being so good that that we're just like, well, we're not going to try anymore.
But killing this country, you've said that.
We're only winners. Yeah, stop the boats. So, I mean, why aren't we stealing more of New Zealand's culture? Because they're the best blokes in cricket, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, we just always want to alpha New Zealand, though, don't we? Like, it's just one of those things.
We can't help it. And, like, you know, the World Cup final a couple of years ago when McCullum charged down the wicket and just got rolled in the first over.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they've even got their PM, Jacinta Ardern, you know, who's incredibly capable and intelligent person, also an attractive woman as well, who's just gone an alpha Trump on the world stage a few weeks ago.
And she's then become a mother in office as well.
Yeah, mother in office, gone on the Colbert show to alpha Trump again. We've got Morrison.
Wearing a MAGA cap.
We've got Kanye in office. That's what's happened.
Yeah.
Pez, you alluded to it before, but the Shield shootout is happening. It's an annual event. This is their favourite time of year. Right about the same time as the Spring Carnival season just kicks off, you know?
Shootout.
Everyone's...
Sounds like a race, in the mood actually. For a
punk. It sounds like one of those wacky races, Peter Perfect. Everyone's failed, so this is a problem. We've got an excuse. Like, we've got four of our best batsmen. Well, I've included Bancroft in there. But we've got guys who have put their hands up who would be in the team who aren't in the team anymore through injury, suspension, cheating, etc. So Lloyd Pope, bat four?
I'd say so. Yeah.
Okay.
You mentioned Bancroft before. I thought he was the beneficiary of the last Shield shootout.
Yes.
And it's almost like an Australian Idol type thing, like a reality TV show that just runs for a mini season before the summer starts. I must say, I did read a good tweet about Lloyd Pope. How much do Australians froth on wrongans, though? It was just absolutely...
And the thing is, Warnie couldn't even... We've got the same brain. We said the same thing. But Warnie couldn't bowl a wrong.
Yeah.
Couldn't bowl one.
He could bowl one. It wasn't as good as his flipper.
Didn't discernibly change direction to the extent that I wanted it to as a viewer. Exactly.
Weren't Warne's last 300 test wickets just the same ball, but you just call it different stuff?
Blokes playing around it out of fear.
Oh, that's the Zouter. That's the straight one.
Yeah.
That's a toppy. That's the same thing.
His last 300 were just rubbish deliveries, blokes playing around him.
Yeah, he wasn't that good. Yeah.
His publicist is listening. We're still here. Oh, I'm waiting to hear back from an email. There was a great tweet from Russell Jackson, friend of the show, who just said, "My death row meal, 50 cupcakes topped with frame-by-frame photographs of Lloyd Pope's wrongen." That's
sumptuous.
That's how most of us feel about Lloyd's wrongen.
Limited edition framing.
Mm. Well, coming up next, Australian captain Tim Payne, followed by Steve Waugh.
Are you sick of the same old sports drinks? Do you need a plastic bottle rolling around in the front seat of your car for 6 months that also doubles as a urine capsule for those extra long away days? Something that says, "I think I'm strong, but I'm actually just chubby." Introducing Alpha Aid, the new number one electrolyte drink from TGC. Alpha Aid helps heal the four emotions you faced after a day in the field: hope, shame, boredom, and loneliness. Drink it and you'll feel back to your old self in no time. Alpha Aid doubles as the perfect hangover cure too. Nothing makes you temporarily forget all those "hey, you up" texts like sipping on a cool glass of Alpha Aid while sitting in a blackened room trying not to drop your phone on your face. And now introducing Max Alpha Aid, the patented technology that will actually increase your size in the showers. Low on runs? Give yourself the few extra inches in the post-game showers you so desperately crave. It might just be enough to keep your spot in the side. Max Alpha Aid by TGC. For the man who has nothing to hide, but still wants to.
Well, boys, I've had "Hail to the Chief" in my head all day. You know, we serve at the pleasure of the president. Not only is this man on the line, the current Australian cricket captain, and just let that sit for a little while on the Grade Cricketer podcast, he also has the cleanest, neatest presentation of any wicketkeeper I've seen. And even though there are deep-seated cultural questions we're going to press him on, I expect his keeping cleanliness will form at least 75% of today's conversation. He's the Australian cricket captain. We're told he has about 10 minutes, so we'll be as quick as we can, maybe still a bit more. Tim Payne, welcome to the Grade Cricketer podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's a goal of mine to be on it, and I'm glad I've now ticked the box.
He's a charmer too. Tim, Brett Jeeves said that you dominated him in a third grade match when you were 11 years old in full Kookaburra kit. Is this true, and what does grade cricket mean to you?
No, it wasn't. I was actually in Gray Nichols' kit at the time. And when he says dominate, I think, I was about 12 years old. I think I batted for about 4 hours and scored 15. and a couple of bowlers that quick. I remember it was quite hot, but my older brother was playing in that game as well. He made me wear two vests just to cushion the blow in case I got hit in the ribs. So that was my first taste of, I suppose, men's grade cricket, because I'd only played sort of junior stuff, obviously, until that stage. Mm. So it was a real eye-opener, that's for sure.
I mean, I can only imagine the eye-opener that it was. I mean, you were a 14-year-old boy playing first grade cricket against fully grown men. I mean, do you have, aside from the Jeeves anecdote, do you have any other really, you know, almost unsettling, vivid memories of this time as kind of started doing it as a teenager?
I remember, in my early years, I might have played a handful of games. And I remember getting a fearful spray from a guy called Sean Young, who was a Tasmanian all-rounder, played one test for Australia. He was a pretty good cricketer and renowned for being a bit of a scary bloke. And I think I rubbed him up the wrong way when I walked out at like 14 or 15 years of age with all the gear on and the collar up and the sweatband three quarters up the arm. But I was just trying to, you know, look the part, and didn't go down all that well with the big fella. So he went pretty hard at me for about a whole session, to be honest. And then, to be honest, he carried it on when he was batting. He was hitting, I'll never forget it, he was hitting balls to fine leg, and I was wicket-keeping, and as it would go down to fine leg, he would literally walk the single to the non-strikers backwards.
Backwards? He'd moonwalk.
Spraying me about my bottom hips or my collar or... cricketers. Good day, that one.
Alpha. Saturday morning, as we record this, Tim, you are the current Australian cricket captain. I just keep saying that out loud to you. And you're about to play grade cricket. So I guess I'm asking, like, are you prepared to give out several, you know, pieces of kit, gloves, sticks?
I am. I've always, well, not always, that's a lie. In the last few years, I've always had two different kit bags. I've always had one with sort of last year's gear in it, which I use at club cricket, and I've got my gear that I use, which is obviously the current year. So I'll take all that. Normally, if I'm getting towards the end of the season, I'll leave it all there. But today, I'm not sure how many club games I'm going to play this year, so I'll probably unload most of it at stumps.
What are you expecting from grade cricket today, Tim? Like, you are the Australian cricket captain and you're about to drive on a Saturday morning to grade cricket. Like, what are you expecting? Are you going to look over people's shoulders when they talk to you? Are you going to expect people to give you nicknames even though they've never met you before? I mean, like, what is it like being Australian cricket captain?
I've always been pretty close to my club. I was down there training on Thursday. I actually lived only 100 metres from the club. So a lot of my good mates are down there involved, albeit now most of them are sort of coaching. But... I think there'll be a few young guys that I haven't met this morning, but apart from that, I sort of know everyone. And
they'll all know who you are. Just be prepared to be completely eyeballed by everyone and the subject of everything.
Yeah, we have got a few guys in our A-grade team that probably won't have a clue who I am. So a few uni students that I'm not even sure pay any attention. I don't even know if they know they're playing cricket on a Saturday half.
We'll move forward to your main role as Australian cricket captain rather than a grade player. We talked to Jason Gillespie last week in an interview that was destroyed by bad audio at my end, and we have apologised multiple times to the listeners about that. We talked to him about his coaching philosophy, and he gave a really interesting answer about it. And I thought I'd sort of run it on to you a little bit as well, mate. Like, what's your, you know, there's been a lot of change in Australian cricket. You've taken on the side in a period of, you know, a bit of tumult. What are you about as a captain? You know, what's your captaining philosophy? What can fans expect from you this summer and beyond as a captain?
I haven't got a huge philosophy on it. I just, my philosophy is just to be myself. I know it's, might sound a bit simple, but you know, I think when you're trying to be someone you're not or act in a certain way, it just doesn't work. So for me, it's purely about trying to be myself, trying to be the same person I was before I was captain. And I think if I can do that, it'll hold me in good stead. So I'm looking forward to getting a nice grounding today when I do turn up to club cricket. Nice welcome from the opposition, which always helps you stay nice and grounded. So. A big one on sort of philosophies on that sort of stuff. The coaching is probably slightly different because you've got to have the style of play and all that sort of stuff. But as a, purely as a captain, I just try and be myself and and go with what I feel and what I think at the time.
Yeah, Granada's an interesting one, Tim, because I was just sort of noticing at the end of the first test there in Dubai, after you guys batted for six sessions there, and you were out there defending the final balls. And then when you were walking off, you seemed to gesticulate to sort of calm down to the dressing rooms. Can you sort of explain why you did that?
Well, it was only a draw, wasn't it? And we'd been outplayed for the majority of the tests, so... I remember, I think I said after the game, I remember watching that Forged in Fire, the Ashes documentary.
Oh, yeah.
And Michael Vaughan sort of touched on it when he saw the Australians celebrate the draw at Old Trafford, that he thought they sort of had a mental edge over them, or an edge over them, because they saw them celebrating the draw. So I was just mindful of that. I think it was sort of in the back of the head. And I didn't want the boys to get too carried away with the draw, albeit, you know, a pretty good fighting effort. But at the end of the day, it was still a draw, and we're there to win.
I mean, Tim, you know, just speaking of leadership, there's so much conjecture at the moment around the current batting lineup. You know, it's anyone's guess who will constitute the top six for the first test against India. In terms of leadership, like, how hard is it to lead a cricket team where, you know, perhaps with the exception of a couple of bowlers, no one has really cemented their position? I mean, cricketers are insecure by nature. Yeah. How do you kind of lead that?
That's a very good point. Yeah, it can be a challenge, but I suppose that's my role, is to try and make sure guys, when they are in and around the team, they feel really comfortable and feel like, you know, they're part of the team. So that's my role. But you're dead right. Cricketers are so insecure. It's not funny. And they seem to get more insecure the higher up you go. But, yeah, that's one of the challenges, and you know, something I'm sort of working really hard on is making those guys feel comfortable so they can go out and play the way we know they can play.
We'll move on to the throwdowns component of the interview, Tim. I presume you're a long-time listener of our podcast, so you know exactly what that means. But just in the event that you don't, the joke's wrapped up in the question, and you probably don't have to do anything really. It's quite self-indulgent. So answer what you want, leave what you want. I'll kick it off. Tim, you're the cleanest, neatest wicketkeeper we've seen in a long time, and it satisfies lovers of symmetry everywhere to see you go about your craft with such purity. With that in mind, how crushing is it to have regularly posed in keeping gloves and a short-sleeved shirt in CA promos?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, though, I've copped so much flack about that, but what they don't understand, it's really frustrating when you have to go around all these rooms and get different photos taken. Mm. And in one room you're supposed to have your helmet and your gloves, the next one you're supposed to have your this and your that, and to be honest, after about half an hour, you just don't care. It's just short sleeve on, and I know, and I'm sitting there taking it, and I know I'm going to cop it. it's not worth the effort to go back up to my room, get another shirt. What people haven't seemed to pick up on in that shot in particular is it's not even my T-shirt. It's got Cameron Bancroft's initials on my sleeve. I've snuck that one because, again, I didn't want to go to my room. I didn't have a shirt, test shirt. So I said, bang, can I have that one?
Yeah.
Chucked it on. And then, of course, he wanted the wicket-keeping shot, didn't he? So it went down beautifully.
Yeah.
Look, Tim, one of Justin Langer's favourite sentences at the moment is character over cover drive, should I say. Character over cover drives. But does this bloke know how good a cover drive feels? Like, there is nothing better than creaming a cover drive out of the meat of the bat and watching it cannon into the fence. Nothing.
It's
thoughts?
One of the great things, isn't it? Well, again, as I was down at grade cricket on Tuesday night, I reckon I saw blokes get out 15 times in 10-minute net. But every time they crunched a cover drive, what did everyone do? Shot, mate. He's got out 15 times trying to play it. He's nailed one, but keep going with it.
Tim, you and Steve Smith famously debuted together in the same game against Pakistan at Lord's back in 2010. Did you think back then that it was inevitable that 8 years later you'd be captain of Australia while he'd be doing covers for his great team?
Well, I thought it was, but I thought it'd be the other way around, to be honest. Well, 7 years ago it was. I was doing covers 18 months ago at grade cricket. So, there's some truth in that, just the wrong way around. But, yeah, it's interesting. I saw a photo of that one the other day, actually, when we were presented our caps, me and Smithy. So, he's certainly getting better looking with age, old smudge. There's no doubt about that.
Tim, we occasionally try and source a few questions from anonymous sources for people who may know the interviewee in question, and we've done that on this occasion. So this is anonymously submitted, but The text reads, "Oh, and get him to tell you about playing football for the Griffith Gladiators when he was at the Cricket Academy. He talked up a massive game for a couple of weeks, had his nose broken in the first 2 minutes of the game and had to have surgery."
I don't know if I can admit to that. Cricket Academy paid for the surgery.
Okay.
Well, now probably can't take it back. So we stayed up at the Griffith Uni. Went the first year the academy moved to Brisbane, and a few of us thought it'd be a good idea to go down and watch the footy. The boys were all staying with, and so we rolled up with a carton actually in one of the back of the vans, and reversed it up to the fence. And one of the boys came over and said, "Oh, didn't you guys play footy?" And now, if you ask a bunch of cricketers if anyone plays footy, you know what answer you're going to get. We had 8 top 10 draft picks in the 6, 18 of us were there. So we said, "Yeah, we play a bit. This bloke would have been top 5. This bloke would have been drafted. This bloke was that." Yeah. "Oh, well, do you want to have a kick?" And we said, "Oh, maybe." So we ended up going down to training during the week. I think about 7 of us ended up playing. And I started all right. I kicked one, hit the post a couple of times. And then there was a bit of a mellow, and someone grabbed hold of Dougie Bollinger and flung him out of his pack, and the big fella, no one got me right in the nose. So it was the shortest-lived comeback of all time. So I've lasted about 15 minutes, had my nose splattered. I then was that upset because I thought my cricket career's over here when I get found out what's happened here. So I actually got in one of the vans we used to have, and I drove it back to the university. At the time, I didn't have a license. That's how upset I was. I dodged a couple of bullets that day, but we managed to get away with it somehow. I'm not sure how we did in the end, but yeah, there was some good footy being played for about 6 weeks, so I must admit, but I only lasted 15 minutes, which was disappointing.
It's a good thing the culture review's already come out, because some of those things might have gone for us.
I think that was in the Argus review. That
Tim, former Test captain Ian Chappell has recently said that he thinks Justin Langer is running the show and has called for you to wrestle control away from him. How exactly do you plan to execute this leadership coup, and do you have the numbers for a spill?
Well, that's a good point. I won't be wrestling JL. He's a black belt for a start. So, but I could have the numbers. I'm not sure. I'll have to check that. But yeah, it's interesting because I haven't seen Chappelli around the group a hell of a lot. He wasn't over in Dubai, or at least I didn't notice. So he's got some interesting theories for a guy.
Definitely an advocate of strong leadership, isn't he? Really strong-fisted leadership.
Yeah, he's the captain's the be-all and end-all in that era. But I think what some of those guys forget now is you actually have more than a captain, coach, and a physio on tour, so you can spread the load a little bit more. he's made some good comments for a guy who hasn't been around.
Tim, when you ran out as Ali in the second test in Abu Dhabi, although it was possibly the funniest moment in cricket history since every single one of Chris Martin's batting innings, some questions were incorrectly raised about sportsmanship and the spirit of the game. Can you confirm, however, that Australia will execute and uphold any man cad decision against Virat Kohli this summer?
Oh, gee, I'll tell you what, I'd like to. I don't think we'll get away with it. We might have to try something different, though, the way he's going. He doesn't look like getting out. So, I think it's all fair, isn't it? If you give a warning the first time, then the second time it's game on, isn't it? So as long as you give the fair warning, we'll play on. I'll tell you who was a great exponent of one, and he kept doing it. There's actually in club cricket as well, I played with him down here, and that was Ben Lachlan.
Oh, yeah.
If he couldn't get you out, you knew the man had was coming at some stage. He tried it nearly every club game I played with him, I reckon.
What a horrible bloke.
And could not believe it when you would say, mate, we're not going to uphold that appeal. Well, it's in the rules, mate. So I wouldn't take it up about as well, will we? Oh, right. We're behind.
Christ.
Oh, you should be very funny.
Tim, you are the sensitive new age face of Australian cricket, and previous captains have come into the role with fresh face, full of hair, departed years later with deep frown lines and bald patches, you know, such as the stress of the top job. What's your skincare routine?
Well, I have just a bit of moisturiser, to be fair. It's not a whole heap to it. Hopefully it stays that way, but I think I've already started to get a few grey hairs come through. But
no refoil today at Great Cricket, just to get that glow for the
not
circuit.
Today. Not today. No, well, I can't circuit anymore either, see. So now I've got two kids. So I was just thinking this morning, actually, when I was putting my grade gear on. Normally, I'm putting my grade kit on, and I've got my coat hanger with my collared shirt, jeans, and shoes.
Yep.
Yeah, this morning, I've been packing backpacks with nappies and bottles.
That guy.
Really changed. And to be fair, I'd probably be a little bit dusty as well back 5 or 6 years ago. Fresh as a daisy this morning, so I probably won't get the run.
All right, Tim, I think this is the last one from us, so thanks for enduring everything. But to finish off, obviously in the South Africa series just gone, got a little bit tasty between both sides, sort of resulting in that scuffle in Durban in the stairwell, the dressing rooms there at Durban. But have you seen a more alpha moment than when Faf du Plessis actually just strolled out in nothing but a towel?
Yeah, great rig.
Oh, it was fantastic, wasn't it? It was very good. I was thinking about, actually, I thought, if something does kick off here, what are we going to do to it? It was fashion as how. I thought, well, he's easy. So I was more worried about Rabada, who had the chest puffed out. I thought, we'd probably need Hayes to take him. I thought, Faf with the towel, I reckon if I just whip the towel off him, he's going to go scurrying back into the room, and then we're going to have one extra man.
Oh, would he?
But it could have an adverse reaction. Yeah. And he's just, yeah, just fighting a naked man suddenly.
Yeah. I reckon he would have just held his pose fast. He's pretty good at it.
Yeah. That's great. Tim, thanks for being such a good sport for those wild set of questions. All the best today at Grade Cricket. That's the Australian cricket captain playing Grade Cricket. And thanks for coming on our show.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
Cheers.
I don't play cricket for results. I don't come to take wickets, score runs, or win games. I play cricket to look good. Rigs, chests, pipes, circuits, salads. This is my domain. So when I hit the sheds, I need to radiate success. That's why I use Chop King Cologne by TGC. With a blend of the finest handcrafted English willow and Kookaburra Red King leather, Chop King Cologne lets me radiate cricket. Whatever the ground, whatever the circuit. Chop King Cologne. The new fragrance for men by TGC. Reek of runs without hitting them.
Just a couple of numbers here before we introduce Steve. 168 tests, 32 hundreds, 10,927 runs, an average of 51.06, 92 test wickets, best of 5 for 28 if you don't mind. Mm. One of Australia's greatest ever captains. It gets better than that. He uses his supreme influence to actually help people and is now one of Australia's most well-known philanthropists. And we're going to hear about that. I think we'd actually have to raise Bradman from the dead to secure a more revered guest than this man. We're actually all standing up at the moment, hail to the Chiefs style. Welcome to the Grade Cricketer podcast, Stephen Roger Waugh.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for the introduction.
Love it.
Look, very good.
Tugger, and can I call you Tugger?
That's fine, no problem. Yeah.
Right.
Very good. Very
we always start the same way, and we want to stay true. You know, there's so much question about the need for top-level cricket to better connect with grassroots cricket. You played grade cricket for Bankstown in an amazing era.
Yep.
Like, tell us what grade cricket means to you. How vivid are your memories of Bankstown Oval, and what's grade cricket's place in Australian cricket?
Yeah, look, very strong memories. Look, I remember going there as a young kid, 10, 11, 12-year-old, and putting the nameplates into the scoreboard, you know, as we went from junior cricket in the morning to watch grade cricket all afternoon. And we got a free soft drink and a packet of chips, and we were happy as Larry, you know, sitting up there watching grade cricket and putting and doing the scoreboard. So that was my initiation of grade cricket. Of course, I wanted to play Australia and New South Wales. And Bankstown, I always loved coming back, playing Memorial Oval, playing grade cricket for Bankstown was, you know, just as big a highlight as me as playing for my country. So I loved it, and I think we've lost a bit of that connection to great cricket for a lot of the modern-day cricketers. They don't see their clubs much, and they're not allowed to play much because they're protected because of workloads and things like that. So we've lost that real connection to grassroots cricket.
Steve, it's obviously stayed in the family as well because your son, Austin, is playing first grade at the moment for Sutherland, and he's playing with Steve Smith and Shane Watson as well. So how's he finding great cricket?
Yeah, look, it's I've watched great cricket last game. It's a very good standard. I think people take it for granted a bit, and whilst it's not ideal situation for Steve Smith to be playing great cricket, it's great that he is because it gives it some recognition, some relevance, and young players who are playing with him are learning a lot, and the players that are playing against him can watch how he goes about his business. So the more international players play great cricket, the better it is for the health of Australian cricket. So, it's a really good experience for all those young boys.
I mean, has it changed much, Steve, since, you were a youngster coming through great cricket to now? I mean, that's obviously a few decades spanning. Is it ostensibly still the same product, or have the blokes changed? What's the kind of vibe?
Yeah, the talent's still there. Obviously, you're missing all the guys. I mean, when I was playing, every side had three or four guys in the mid-30s or over 30 who had 10, 15 years great experience. Other tough nuts, the ones that, made you, a mentally stronger player. But these days, generally, there's one or two players maybe 30 or older, and most guys are 22, 23, so it's much younger, and you haven't got that real hard-edge competition you used to have and those tough nuts. And you're probably not passing on the lessons that we were lucky enough to get when I was growing up. The guys had played a lot, and they'd tell you how to go about your business. So you're sort of missing a bit of that learning experience these days.
Steve, you set off on the captain's ride on Monday. It's about putting rare diseases on the map. Just reading through the website, mate, 8,000 rare diseases affecting around 1.5 million Aussies, 300,000 Australian kids. I mean, two of us in the studio have just recently had kids, and you do start to think about these things a bit differently. So can you just tell us a little bit about the ride and, how we can help, most importantly?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's common. Rare diseases are quite common, paradoxically, but we as a foundation, support the extremely rare conditions. So the ones that have a prevalence of less than 200,000, which is about 500 diseases, and we do that because they're the ones that have no support group and no government funding. The Captain's Ride is our major fundraiser for you, 800Ks over 6 days, 11,000 metres of climbing. So it's pretty torturous, but we made it like that. I made it like that because the kids we support do a tough each and every day, and for us it's about 6 days of doing it tough. So we try and emulate this spirit. We have a leadership component. So I feel like Adam Goods is coming for the whole 6 days. Daley Thompson's coming out from the UK. We've got Anna Mears coming. We've got Kathy Freeman's joining us on one night. Murph is joining us for a couple of days. Not writing, but he's motivating people. And we've got various other celebrities coming along. Steve Hooker's doing a day with us. So we've got these great people who come along. Danny Foley, Gav Robinson. So it really is a learning experience. It's leadership advice, networking, raising money for cause, and you're putting rare diseases on the map.
Fantastic, Steve. I mean, we just earlier talked a little bit about the health of grade cricket. I'm interested in the health of state cricket because as a kid, for me, one of the great memories was actually going to the Blues Brothers cricket camps at Chatswood Indoor Nets, which you were heavily involved in. And, yourself, Brad McNamara, Mo Matthews, Richard Cheekway was involved as well. I mean, that was the mid-90s and state cricket was at its absolute zenith. Just interested in your thoughts on the health of domestic cricket right now, because obviously the proof's in the pudding in terms of how we're going on the field and the test side.
More importantly, mate, did you keep the bag we gave you? Hope you kept it, it was
something
pretty special back in those days. But, health of domestic cricket. Look, we've got plenty of good players, and I look at Shield cricket. The quality is there. It's just they're not probably getting enough tough cricket at state level, and we want test players coming back. We want more relevance in Shield cricket. If Shield cricket's strong, Australian cricket is strong, and I think when we're losing, we look back and think, has the Shield match has been devalued? Players coming in and out, playing one or two days, and being safe for test matches. A lot of guys not playing Shield cricket because they're being rested. We need to get back to finding that balance is obviously tough because the international players have got a lot of cricket on, but we do need them playing domestic cricket to pull up the standards. So when guys elevate from Shield cricket to test cricket, it's not such a big jump.
Tucker, there's been a lot of talk about sort of the culture in Australian cricket at the moment. Can you describe to us the differences? You played underneath Alan Border, Mark Taylor, and of course your own era in the late sort of 1990s and early 2000s. Can you describe the differences in culture to what it was during that time and what you see now?
It's hard. Culture is a really hard word to define, and I don't know exactly what that means sometimes, but I guess it's what you stand for, your values, how you play, how you carry yourself, I guess it's changed under different leadership and different captains. You have your own sort of set ways, but I guess the culture of Australian cricket is essentially to play hard and fair. we're always going to be saying stuff on the field. That's the nature of how we're brought up and how we play our sport. As long as you don't cross over the personal side of things, I mean, there's got to be talk on the cricket field. Right? There's 7 hours a day. It's going to be pretty lonely and pretty boring if no one's saying much. So, but at the end of the day, the main thing about playing good cricket is executing skills. And if you're playing well, you don't need to have that senseless talk out in the middle. So, you know, we've got to just pull it back a bit. I think it got out of control the last couple of years particularly. And it was a real wake-up call. The sandpaper episode in Cape Town has put it, I guess, in a sharper focus. And we can hopefully reboot the system and start all over and reset and start over again. We've got plenty of good players, but we've still got to play the Australian way. Mm.
Steve, I just came back from living in London for 2 years, and I know there's a lot of cricket people over there who are a little bit sceptical about the kind of mythology behind the baggy green. And I know that's something that sort of means a lot to you, and you know, you've put a lot into making sure that the baggy green is a symbol that kind of Aussies can be proud of. Can you sort of defend that position a little bit, you know, to all the sceptics out there in London and the UK who say the baggy green is a myth?
Yeah,
what's your view on that?
Googles, I can't get one. You know, to me, I love it. It's iconic. It's my most prized possession, material possession, I think it is. I think you got to stand for something in your organisation, whether it's a couple of words that mean something to you, or the colours of the organisation, or what you wear. So for us, being united and wearing 11 baggy green caps sends a message to the opposition: this team is together. I think it's more the message it sends out, and plus it feels nice to wear the baggy green cap. I love wearing it. For me, it was part of me when I played cricket. And I hope that tradition gets passed on. You got to have traditions, and that's part of the culture that you create. And the baggy green to me is important. Other nations might, talk it down a bit, but for us, I think it's something to be proud of. It's a very elite club.
It's a very elite club. I can only imagine what it feels like to put on that hat.
Steve, India coming out here in a moment's time. How does Australia get Virat Kohli out, and have you seen a more complete player in the last decade or so?
Yeah. No, he's a super player. I mean, he's as good a player as I've ever seen. I think he'll go down he'll break all the batting records bar Bravin's average. I think that's what he'll do. He's just relentless, and he's... professional and fit, and he's motivated. He ticks all the boxes. He's a great player. I think the way you get all great players out is you bowl line and length, and you test their defence out early on. You make them play when they're a bit uncertain, and then when they get in, then it's obviously hard that you've got to restrict it. But I think you've got to be attacking when they first go in, and probe in and around that off stump and look for a loose shot.
Well, that's what we're going to do right now, Steve, as we go on to what we call throwdowns. You don't need to be worried about it in any way. I know you've only got a couple of minutes left, and you've got the greatest defence I've ever seen. So if you don't want to answer any of the questions, please don't do it. Hope that they're all respectfully asked. The first one is, Steve, how privately satisfying was it when Jimmy Ormond told your brother he wasn't the best player in his family?
I gave Jimmy the line beforehand, so he used the word.
Steve, in 1995 you hit the Mercantile Mutual sign in a one day, which netted you $140,000. Mm-hmm. Now, while you looked very calm on the surface, I'm certain you were absolutely elated inside, having robbed an insurance agency of $140,000. Just how large did you go that night on the circuit?
Well, actually, I was hungover the night before, so I was struggling when I played that day, I must admit. It was a good thing. We were pretty excited about it, and we split it. Actually, back in those days, I was the first one to win it, so I split it amongst 12 players, and we gave some money to the rest of the state squad, and I gave some money to charity.
Bridgetown, 1999. You scored 199 in the first innings before the West Indies went on to win the match by one wicket, chasing down the target of 311, thanks to a Brian Lara fourth innings, 153 not out. How difficult was it to hide your glee at scoring 199 while you dressed the team down, demanding that more of your team bat as well as you?
I was 4 years off. I got out for 199 to the average spinner. It's a straight one, so I was disappointed with that. But I think in that situation, you're pleased you're getting 100, that's for sure. But at the end of the day, if you're losing test match, and particularly I chased a big score in the fourth inning, that was really what the focus was. I was really disappointed the team lost, but... It does boil down to the team. What happens to the team on that situation? But
no,
could have been a better result. That's for sure.
Steve, I know you've had a few questions on this, but I was going to go for it anyway, and probably the other guys will too. But you know, Shane, your mate Shane has made numerous comments about you for the last, say, 15 years straight, and I just want to know, how good does dignified silence feel?
I don't see any point in even debating what he's saying, and I haven't read the book at all, so look, I'm not fussed. I mean, I've got more important things to do in life, really, and one of those is focusing the charity stuff. So, I'll let them go through the keys, mate.
And it's a great leave.
Yeah. So you didn't watch 7:30 Report with Lee Sales the other night?
No, I don't know what happened there, and I probably don't want to know either.
Something about refugees. Steve, when I was a kid, I used to relentlessly practice your signature in exercise books. Not just yours, I could do all the cricketers' signatures.
Yeah.
But I was especially proficient at yours. Now that I'm a fully grown man and can still perform your signature on demand to a potentially forgeable level of accuracy, how much does that concern you?
Yes. Well, it does, because there's a lot of fraudulent base dreams that they must use.
Data security.
My lawyer will be in contact with you.
Tiger, Ashes, 2001. Your brother Mark just scored 120 at the Oval. How often do you remind him that you completely alphaed him by scoring 157 with a torn Achilles in the same innings?
Injury of the calf, that's right. It was a fun day, actually, and they all came together, and we sort of, it was like playing the backyard again. We sort of played with freedom and sort of smashed the palms around, so those days didn't happen very often, so it was, wasn't about who had the most runs, but it was sort of having fun together, scoring a century.
Probably the last one here, Tugger. You were known for carrying a lucky red handkerchief while batting, a superstitious habit that no doubt resulted in greater performances. At work, I'm 5% behind on my sales budget for Q4. Can I please borrow your hanky for my upcoming business trip to Melbourne?
It's going to be tough, mate. It's in the SCG Museum and it's locked away. So I'm not sure what I can advise you on there, but if you think it works, it generally works. I mean, I used to look down at the hanky in my pocket, and it was almost like a security blanket. I felt good; it was in my pocket, and for some reason, it convinced me everything was going to be okay. So you need to find some sort of security blanket. You know, I don't know what it is, but go out and buy yourself a teddy bear or something.
Do you remember? Do you remember where you got the hanky from? Like, did you get like two or three pack at David Jones, or where, do you remember where you bought it?
No, it was a towel that was cut up on the change room floor by Tim May, so it was actually a towel. Right. That's probably previously used by one of the quick bowlers while I was watching his bat. Yeah.
Steve, that'll do from our end. I think one of the interesting things about talking to you in the context of Australian cricket is, you know, you've clearly used cricket to further yourself and become more worldly, and, you know, that's why you've done so many great things in philanthropy. And I guess to those who listen to this show, you know, we're really grateful to have you on. It's a huge honour, and clearly you're giving back to grade cricket, and, you know, you don't forget the people that need help who might be a little bit beneath you. So if anyone out there is listening and has the opportunity to donate to the Captain's Ride and to support the Steve Waugh Foundation, we encourage you to do so. Yeah. And we wish you well on the ride, mate. Thanks for joining the show.
All right. Thanks, boys. Thanks for having us.
No worries.
Thanks, Steve.
It has been referred to as the best sports writing tribute to a particular sport since Fever Pitch.
Does it do anything to enhance literature? Would be another question.
I wouldn't even call it literature, really.
Hashtag Asked TGC. But before we do that, a reminder, there are live shows happening this summer. We're in the works, actually, to do a live show all around the country this summer. But there is already one that you can purchase tickets for if you are in Sydney. That is January 3, $40 a ticket. How do I get tickets, he goes? Just go on the internet and Google the Grade Cricketer live show. Or you can go to the Comedy Store and go to their website and you can buy the tickets. That's how it's going to work. But we are very much excited to do a live show this summer. Hashtag AskTGC. We thought it might be fun to actually mix this up in the future with a little segment that I'm going to call The Escape Goat. And what we're going to do is we're going to ask to hear from people who've made it out of cricket, who got out. They got out of cricket. Yeah. How did you do it? What are you doing with your Saturdays now? We spoke to Ed Cowan for the first time, you know, this week. And he was saying that he's really enjoying getting his Saturdays back, you know, for the most part.
Yeah. Life on the outside.
Tell us a little bit about how your life's improved as well. Like, is your skin looking brighter? Your fingernails growing back? You know, I just want to hear about the improvements. the amount of times you've gone to, you know, Saturday brunch with your girlfriend.
I love that. I love that.
Or the other way, do you miss it? Do you get on the outside, as many do, when they get outside the incarceration system and actually struggle because they've been institutionalised?
You're more likely to re-offend. There should be some support systems in
place.
That's
right. There should be some halfway houses. So indoor cricket, maybe.
He said blankly and seriously. Get in contact that way. And maybe use the hashtag escapegoat. There's a joke behind that, which I can't remember at the moment. Ben Lester writes in. He says, hey, TGC. Why, when I shadow bat, do I choose beta shots to express myself? I don't drive. I don't clear my front leg and power through. I don't even clip off the hips. I leave balls. And they're not even good leaves. They're a foot and a half outside off stump. Simple leaves. Out of hand, not interested in that, mate, leaves. I don't even play inside it like a real pro. I take the tiniest step forward and lift my shadow gloves and shadow bat out of the way like the cuck that I am, submitting to their irrelevance. But it's not only the leave I shadow bat. I also snick off, squaring up and glancing to second slip over my shoulder, which is now perpendicular to the bowler. Always second slip. He takes it easily and no one celebrates taking my wicket, which is dark when you consider this reality lives in my head. Why, TGC? Why is my imagination, let alone my actual performances, not even good enough to play third team cricket of my South London Surrey Championship team? Good question, Ben. Who wants to take this one on? Eddos?
Oh, sure he goes. It's a wonderful question and beautifully written. I used to shadow bat leave as well and just get snicked off, just completely squared up. And I didn't realise, but I was obviously a cuck as well. But this was in the pre-cuck Trump alpha era, so I didn't read into it as much as Ben has, but maybe I'm also just a weak left-wing beta soy boy.
Any thoughts on this, Bez?
Yeah, I just... as you were reading it out, I was actually mimicking the movement. So it was very well written, and I think we all know what Ben's talking about. And there is something quite rhythmic about either playing and missing, or especially playing and missing and having been done so badly that right shoulder, if you're a right-hand batsman, is almost facing back toward the bowler, and your bat is sort of outside the outside half of your body.
Yeah.
I've never done the look over the left shoulder afterwards to see the catch being taken, but it is still quite a fun movement to do, and it requires a lot of swiveling on the feet.
It's quite angular, isn't it? Because I can visualize the parabola of the ball, like the angle that it's taking from the hand, you know, to you, then ultimately beating you and going with the arm away to the slip cord and just being done all ends up.
Yes, there's some sort of rhythmic dance movie to this, isn't it? You know, African Americans have beaten tempo. You know, white guys have, you know, sneaking off the second slip.
Yeah,
I feel like though when you are shadow batting, you're often wearing a suit, like you're at work, you're maybe carrying an umbrella on the way to work. Wearing a suit, you want to feel tight, don't you? You want to feel compact.
Yeah.
And so that's why you're not playing expansive shots. You want to feel neat, tucked in.
Yeah.
Ian Bell style.
I did it halfway through a meeting last week. This presentation was going shit out.
I think about cricket shots all the time. Seriously, it's a genuine problem. Or not paying attention to what somebody's saying. Mm. I stopped playing 10 years ago. Mm. I think about cricket shots all the time. And shots that I can't play very well. Like, I can't get the timing off my legs. I can't play shots off my legs really well. I never have. I take it too early. But even as I try and visualize, I try and visualize waiting for the ball and actually using the timing off my legs, and I still can't get it right.
But we wrote about this in Tea and No Sympathy. Yes. In that, like, anytime you see like a nice piece of grass, you often think about like what the ball would run,
how it would bounce,
what the run is, that kind of stuff. These are all huge problems which we need Dr. Happy back on for. Matthew Donnelly. He writes in, he said, made a duck, shit umpire decision, twinged my hammy bending down for a ball at mid-off and copped a parking ticket. Should I quit cricket and go to the beach?
Jesus. Well, that's a trifecta, isn't it? Duck, injury and parking ticket. Only thing left is your car breaking down the M5, which happened to me after a game at Old Kings Oval, and was literally the day I decided to quit cricket.
There is something about like causing yourself an injury, doing it like insignificant movement, like bending down, being on the couch for too long, you know, watching One Tree Hill marathons, you know, for instance, you know, Dawson's Creek or the OC. Take your pick. Morris Lester.
I love the name.
Player with an untucked shirt, black New Balance, bucket hat and aviators, fielding fine leg to fine leg, just painting a picture, screaming, nice Gary, to a leg break bowler. A1 troll or one of the first victims in the impending cricket holocaust? #AskTGC. Good question, Morris. Sam Perry.
I don't know. I feel like it's quite optimistic of him to suggest that he's an A1 troll. I would particularly pay that if he was a troll, actually. Like if you just if somebody woke up in the morning and said, "This is my jam today. Yeah. I'm Black New Balance, and I'm not going to tell anybody, and I'm just going to get my own satisfaction from it." Yeah. And if you get it, congratulations to the hardcore fans.
I'm going to pay 500 in subs. I'm going to turn up, drive 30Ks west of the airport. Yeah, Bucket Hat and Aviators. That's grim. For some reason, I'm picturing the lead singer from Wheatus. Yeah, like it's a very mid-2000s aesthetic.
You know how, like, when Dave Warner scored that 100 and then the Snapchat filter caption thingy tag that was like, go back to Park Cricket Champ or something. Like Park Cricket is Aviators, Bucket Hat, finally defined league, that's right. Black Untucked New Balance. Shirt, new buns. That's what that is. It's not 100 against, you know, Trent Copeland and Josh Hazlewood. Jay Child. Hey lads, hashtag RSTGC. A lad at my cricket club has his initials and cap number as his number plate. Purchased from Service Taz, of course. Thoughts on this type of behaviour?
Yeah, so Service Taz, I presume, because we just live in a little Sydney, Melbourne bubble here, would be a Tasmanian thing, because the first thought I had around that kind of sentimentality was AFL. It's got AFL written all over it, that kind of stuff. Like the like appropriation of what you do on a Saturday in sport to the rest of your life as though it has some kind of cultural meaning. Right.
That's interesting.
It's a very AFL thing in my mind. We've just lost half our listeners.
Well, we've seen this before, though, Pez, because you go on people's Twitter bio and they define themselves by which team they support.
That's right.
And if they've got a girlfriend, they often say that they love her.
Yeah.
Mitch, 22, Bombers, better if Storm, they have Man United, Family, BMW.
Conservative,
not
Christian.
Not in that order.
Views own. Yeah. All right. Well, what an unbelievably wonderful show it has been this week on the Great Cricketer Podcast. Too many adjectives to roll in one. Too many amazing guests in the same show. It's unbelievable. Thanks for tuning in as ever. We're going to be back next week. We'll see you then.